blue sky. Please tell us why
you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong?
We get around
talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
Take my generation. Take my generation, baby. Why don't you all fade away?
Talking about my generation.
Don't try and dig what we all say.
My generation,
baby.
Lauren Horowitz.
Why don't you all fade away? Don't try to dig what we all generation.
Hello, John. Listening to the Ew. John, you there? John? John! Can't hear you. Fix your mic.
Hello. John C. Dvorak. You there? Hello?
John, fix your mic, please. Let's do a little texting here.
Test, test.
Oh, coming. Something's happening.
Yeah.
Better?
Yeah.
I think it's him. He's here.
Well, you know what happens?
No, I don't.
My Scarlet, when the system reboots, it turns off the little button for this particular mic that has to be depressed.
Oh, do you have the Focusrite? Or is that the Focusrite Scarlet? What do I got here?
Yeah, this is the one channel.
Yeah, that's what I have. I have that. But I use that for an output for the stream. It's a separate output that just runs right through there. We don't use that really for here, for internal purposes.
Yeah, I use it as a D to A. And then if everything looks right, and then all of a sudden you can't hear me, this because this button.
Somehow the button.
Yeah, the button on the far left.
There's two buttons. There's a 48 volt and there's a aux. I got the Scarlet Solo. Probably different.
Yeah, this is the Solo, this one.
Oh, really?
Huh. The button on the far left. What is it?
I don't have a button on the far left. I have a button on the far right. It says direct or monitor.
No, I have a button on the far left.
And the other one says input and gain, 48 and aux. That's it.
Yeah, well.
Yes, probably fancy.
I had to pull this thing closer to me. I don't know if I can to see what it actually says on the button.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't think anybody cares, actually, if you really want to know the truth.
Yeah, it's 48 volt.
Oh, yeah, 48 volt. Oh, you need that for your mic? What are you running? The Heil?
No, I'm not. I'm running a clone of an SM58. Exactly why it needs 48 volts.
Yeah, exactly.
Is beyond me.
Because this is what I have. I don't need 48 volts for this. Although, then again, 48 volts is depressed now that I look at it.
Well, there you go.
Wonder why that is. That makes no sense. Because you have power. That's weird. That's weird. Okay, let's get going here. Because I'm up since 2:30 in the morning. I'll tell you why in a second. Let's go here.
Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's the 19th. It's the 19th of April, May.
And welcome.
2026.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Memorial Day. It's
coming up.
Am I wrong about the thought that Memorial Day is, isn't it usually the last week of May? What's going on with that? Am I wrong about that?
I just wait for it to show up when people say it's Memorial Day, and then I guess you can't wear white, or now you can wear white.
You can wear white, yeah, yeah.
No, you can wear white.
What do you mean? White? Of course you can. That's the summertime. You wear white.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Labor Day, you can't.
Right.
Do you have? I have a new pair of white patent loafers. Seriously.
Oh, God.
Brand new.
I have a white linen sport coat that I had custom tailor-made for me in Korea.
The last Monday of May every year. That's when it is.
Okay, so I guess it's the last Monday coming up.
Last Monday's coming up, so right around the corner. I'm lacking a little sleep today because I was up at 2:30 in the morning with an incredible pain in the toe. Have you ever had the gouch? You ever get, you know,
the gout? Yeah, I had the gout I was after I graduated from college. I ended up with the gout a couple of times. I got over it. It resulted from drinking too much vintage port.
Oh, that'll do it. I don't know what I did exactly.
I also had a case. I was in Spain and I got a weird case of the gout, which was in the arch of my foot from drinking too much Crianza, this new style of Spanish wine.
It's painful.
Oh, yeah. No, it's horrible.
So I'm sitting here right now with one shoe on, one shoe off.
You get the toe version?
I got the toe version. It's in kind of the big toe, but down to the knuckle. And
that's the classic.
It can't. My toes don't hit the floor. My foot is so swollen, and it hurts so badly. It's almost.
So what brought this?
I don't know. I don't know. My wife.
You ate. It's
my wife thinks it, it. My wife thinks it. The first time we had it. Well, the last time I had it, there was. I ate a bunch of licorice. Red licorice. She says that was it. This time she swears is because I had a hankering for Swedish fish, and I had a bunch of. So now you got two red. Fully high fructose corn syrup based products that I ate the day before.
Yes, what it was.
Not doing that again.
I mean, I've never heard of that particular.
That's crazy.
Causation, but the coincidence is too good. Yeah,
right.
I would say that you it's either the red dye or the something.
Well, I got to tell you something. It hurts. I mean, it's horribly painful and very disruptive. It's
goes away in
on and
days.
On. Yeah, a couple of days, but I'm dying right now. Anyway, let's get a warm DH Unplugged welcome to Kevin Warsh, who's stepping in to a job that right now I can't imagine anybody wants.
Yeah. Well, unless you want to take abuse, you might be a masochist.
There were some great memes of, like, Kevin Warsh being greeted by the bond markets, and it was this S&M master, you know what I mean? One of these guys in chains and whips and stuff, just grabbing by the neck and walking with him, you know? This is great, because right now we have some things about the bond market that's really unbelievable. We have a new transient inflation call. Treasury Secretary Bessent is back on the, well, I guess they forgot about that, the transitory thing, and I'm going to go with it again. I'm going to go with it. They liked it for a while back then. We're going to do it again. And we have another board. We have the Board of Investment, the Board of Peace, the Board of... We have a new one. This is a new way to make exclusive clubs for those guys. You know, the Board of Peace that was developed right before the war broke out, by the way?
Yeah, some peace board, yeah.
It was $1 billion entry fee.
Yeah.
And like 20 people, 20 countries got on that to win favor. And by the way, Donald Trump is the head of that indefinitely. Nice gig. So pretty cool. Yeah. Market's starting to come in a little bit. We saw some weakness over the last several days in the NASDAQ. The chips dip, they come back, they go down, then they just ramp up. It seems that everybody wants them. But then, you know, today, for example, we saw that Intel, AMD, and a few others were dipping down pretty well, like 3-4%. And by the end of the day, wouldn't you know it, they were green. Just buying them hand over fist.
Oh, well, good luck.
That makes sense. I mean, a lot of them are coming out with the same conversation and saying that they have inventories that are going to only last a very short period of time and orders that are going to be sucking everything they have up until the next 5 years.
Yeah, sure.
Which I read a really great piece today. You'll appreciate this. And it talked about the same kind of situation happened where there was plenty of demand back in the internet days of 2000s, 1999, 2000s. And what happened then was there was a funding issue that ended up occurring. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a shortage of orders. It was a shortage of ability to pay. And that can happen for a few different reasons, right? One is...
I think that can happen now.
Yeah. So that's why I think everybody was spooked when a couple months ago, OpenAI, ChatGPT, CFO came out and said, you know, we're concerned about some of these things. We don't know if we're going to meet our numbers. The growth numbers are not there. Our revenue numbers aren't there. And Cisco dropped and all these other companies dropped pretty well. So I think that's a very tricky line they're walking right now. We'll see. Yield curve is steepening. And potential now is turning to the inverse of what we thought, or what not we thought. What markets thought was that we're going to get Washington. It's going to be a couple more cuts this year, or a couple of cuts this year.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out now everybody's thinking we may need a hike.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about on all the shows.
Yep. Fuel running low.
They say that probably this guy Warsh isn't going to do it, but it could happen.
I mean, he's I think he's in a very difficult position right now. And whether or not the bond vigilantes, the bond market, are testing him on his way in, right now we're seeing the 30-year U.S. Treasury yield surging to about 5.14%, putting it at its highest level since the run-up of the 2008 financial crisis. So bets are pricing
I like I never thought of the idea that they're testing. It's a test.
Yeah. We've seen this before.
Yeah. See what he does.
So bets are pricing in the increased possibility of reaching 5.5 to 6%, which you start moving up this route. It looks like there's a double top from, about, I guess we just passed that, but from a year ago. Now it's a straight ride up to, give or take, 5.5 to 6%. 30-year mortgage is at, 6.35% on average, down from 6.91%. At the start of 2026, which is really interesting. The demand there, I guess, is lower. Now, this is a problem for banks. You got rates rising on the short term and the midterm, and then the mortgages that are selling are down, right? You follow what I'm saying? So, therefore, big problem. Here's a chart of the 30-year yield. Look at that nice chart. My system, I just figured out today after using it for 25 years, that you can do these nice area charts.
How'd you figure this out?
I don't know. I clicked something and I right-clicked it. And I said, I wanted it to be an area chart, or I wanted it to be at least a line chart. Then the thing comes up as a line chart. Then I see area filled. I'm like, what? Okay, I'll click. Maybe it was an update recently that I didn't know about. But nice, right? Nice coloration.
Yeah, it's a pretty chart. It's pretty. I like the green.
So here we are back to... it looks like midway through 2023. So this is going back, this is interesting. Go back to 2020 on this, and we were sub 1% or right at 1% on the 30-year. Right? This is when we had some rates that were negative and all that weird stuff that was going on. This is during COVID. Things dropped off a cliff, went from 2.5% to under 1%. And then, of course, things normalized. We had the inflation scare of 22. That was a big move. Look at that move. Look at the angle of the and the trajectory of the upward angle. And by the way, you can go in 22. Yeah, let me just mention.
Yeah, it took off like a rocket.
That's a problem. Those kind of moves are very problematic. So 22 into 23, we went from 1.5%, give or take a little bit, to what, 4.5?
Yeah.
That's a big move. That's why everything got hatcheted. Now, from what we see now, it's a much more orderly type of move, but it's still moving up. A little bit down, a little bit up, but still the general trend has been moving higher. And you can see this chart over on dhunplugged.com. You go over to episode number 803 and click on it and check it out. While you're over there, by the way, since John was gone for, I don't know if this is like they're testing us, like they're testing Warsh, but since John was gone those couple weeks, you know, donations have been a little bit lackluster, John.
They've been terrible.
What's going on?
Well, for one thing, there's not enough, you know, things perk up when there is a real problem in the market.
Yeah.
That's and true. I think the uncertainty of the Iran thing and the fact that nobody knows what's going to happen, whether Mark's going to go up or down. I think it's just a holding pattern. I think it doesn't help our donations at all.
But should people be complacent at a time like this?
Yeah, well, they whether they should be or not, I don't think they should be, but they are. It's, I think.
I think they're very complacent. I think people are just like, hey,
well,
I don't
maybe
care.
You think that maybe they think the show's boring. We don't have any good tips.
Oh, really? I could send a picture of my gout toe out.
No, we get the show's not boring, and we have great stock tips.
Yep. Yep.
Which are not for use; they're only for amusement.
Amusement, of course. But people write all the time, and we tell them, you know, don't do this, you know, seek professional advice. But meanwhile, people tell us all the time, oh, thank you so much. Anyway, go over to dhunplug.com and click on the donate button. You'll help. If you didn't notice, John and I are not doing well health-wise. I got my torn meniscus. Did I tell you I had the torn meniscus that was affirmed?
Yeah, from pickleball.
Well, it could be from a lot of things. I got that going on. Now my hips bother me on the side because I'm using that. And now I got this thing. So from the waist down, I'm in big trouble. Big problem. More to boards. The Board of Peace. Remember that when we talked about that? Established in 2025. 15 countries pitched in $1 billion. And definitely chaired by President Trump. We mentioned that. A mix
what do they need the money for?
Because it's exclusive. I don't know.
It's
you get a permit.
Like a Yakuza deal.
I don't understand what they're trying to accomplish. They clearly did not clean up any wars since 2025. They're not very peaceful. They're trying to. I don't know. It's you know, what's the point of it? They're trying to get these people together for talking. It's supposed to be maybe an alternative to the UN. There's some talk about that. Maybe the next NATO? I don't know. Or conceptually. So
what do they do with the money?
I don't know. Shall we ask? Shall we ask the robot? What was done with the Board of Peace initiation fees, right? Fund the reconstruction of the Gaza Strip. Ah, there you go.
Oh,
this is all about the hotels.
Real estate, after all.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't know that. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, we learned something today.
But many international states have expressed hesitation to finance Gaza's rebuilding effort through the board, preferring to channel money through traditional institutions like the United Nations over transparency and oversight. These things, and this is what's going on here. Let me give you the punchline of all this, okay? These boards, this new one, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent mentioned this board of investment that is going to happen, that was happening at this occurred at the, I think, towards the end of the China visit. And the Board of Investment will be responsible for investment in non-sensitive areas. So the idea of the Board of Investment, this is what he said, is to have a mechanism that could allow deals that wouldn't need to be referred to the Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States. In other words, what I see this as is the ability to work outside of the established channels whose primary functions are to determine whether these transactions pose risk to U.S. national security. So you just avoid them by doing another board, funneling money there, and investing that way. So I think this is two of the same kind of things.
Well, I hope they use the money wisely.
Yeah, I hope so too. Iran, on and off. We canceled the scheduled bombing. We interrupt this show to tell you that we have canceled the scheduled bombing of Iran for tomorrow. Come again tomorrow. We'll update you with the next potential date that we will be carpet bombing them this week. Thank you. President Trump, speaking with reporters, says he will know soon if the U.S. needs to give Iran another big hit. It's kind of like parents attempt. You ever see those parents that go to the kid? Oh, Johnny, if you don't stop that, you're going to be punished. Johnny, I'm going to count to three. One. Johnny, I'm not kidding. Johnny, three, four, five. I'm up to five, Johnny. You've seen this, right?
Yeah.
Boy, don't they feel dumb?
Yeah, I would think so. And this is what's going on now.
That's exactly what's happening. If they want to make a deal, if they don't make a deal, we're gonna beat them up. Anyway, and the other thing I'll mention on this, and this is kind of interesting, we have a lot of other pricing issues and stocks to talk about. The Chinese, because I think the Chinese trip was pretty important. President Xi Jinping warned the U.S. president on Thursday that the U.S. and China will have clashes and even conflicts if this whole long-standing issue of Taiwan's independence is mishandled. And there was some other talk about things, and there was this comment somewhere which was kind of interesting. It was translated to English from, I guess, Mandarin, that President Xi Jinping was worried and concerned about the potential of a Thucydides. Thucydides. Do you know about this?
Well, it actually is a Thucydides.
Thucydides. Okay. This trap where tensions historically between a rising and a ruling power have often resulted in a war.
That's bull crap. This is like a nonsense commentary. It was about the Spartans versus the Athenians, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. They're next door neighbors, a lot different. I find that this is some sort of creation of the media.
I thought the...
What trap?
I thought that there may have been something said like, hey, we need to really make sure that we maintain a good and open things, or else we could end up having some conflict. But then somebody put this particular word on it, because how often have you heard this in the past?
Never.
Right. Especially one of these...
Especially coming from China.
China. A word that you can't pronounce to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, this thing, it was just some sort of fraud.
The Thucydides trap. It's just a fun thing to put out there and grab your attention, which is why we're, in fact, naming the show The Thucydides Trap. The title of the show. Let's just do that. Some observations. Went shopping the other day. Hey, check this out. Tell me what you think. I was in California, you know, a couple days ago.
Oh, yeah, where?
I was in Fresno.
Why?
I was visiting a client and his family. Very nice visit. And learned a lot about Fresno. I was in it. I got in at 1 o'clock. I was out the next morning at 7. And we had dinner. We had lunch. We toured this really nice town. And it was a lot of fun. I learned all about things. But I saw the gas prices there. Holy crap.
Yeah, that's typical.
$8 for credit on diesel.
Oh, yeah. That's a little high.
And he has a 60-gallon F-350.
I can get it around here for $7.50.
$7.50. And he has a 60-gallon F-350 that takes diesel.
Yeah.
Think about that. It's like filling up my boat.
My son-in-law and daughter have a van that takes E85.
Really? That's cheap, right?
$3.
Yeah. It's not coughing up and down the street the whole time and just black smoke coming out of the back?
No, it's actually a very smooth ride. It's a good product.
Huh. Interesting. Because I've always seen it, and so I was like, who's getting that?
It's very hard. You have to find it. There's only two stations in the area that have it, but it's cheap.
Right. I went to a produce store, and I saw veggie prices here in Florida, and I was like, what? Wait a second. Cauliflower was $9. Carrots, a small bag, $6.
Yeah, a little high.
Not, and this is not the organic stuff. And what I found fascinating was I looked around my favorite produce store. I looked at the lettuce, the cabbages. I looked at the cauliflowers. Everything looks like it was going bad.
At those prices, I can see why.
Right. That's exactly a point. I had to think about that for a second. I'm like, you know what? I bet people – I didn't buy the cauliflower. I didn't buy the carrots. That's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's too high.
So I think – we've talked about this whole idea of what's the best cure for higher prices, and that's higher prices, right? And that drives people not to buy. I have been waiting for, not like aggressively watching, but you know, in the back of my head, when is the day going to come when I'm like, nope, you know what? I'm not buying that product. And it, lo and behold, it came.
I guess so.
Yep. And that goes with what happened last week. The report on PPI, the Producer's Price Index, came in of a headline number of 1.4% month over month. That's year over year plus 6%. That's the wholesale inflation number. Core PPI, which excluded food and energy, is about 1% month over month. course, energy was a big part. Services also saw a large move. So when you look at headline versus core, core strips out food and energy for whatever reason. Somebody figured that out one day. It's better to show that. Highest monthly increase since March of 2022. There's inflation in the system. There's no question about that. And if anybody wants to just say, yeah, but it's just energy and a few other things, okay. So what are you telling me? Money, while, listen, dollars are fungible, right? But there's only so much you can move it from one place to another. When you start getting those kinds of increases, people make conscious decisions on what to do with their money.
Yeah, what to buy and what not to buy. I'm not buying that.
Right.
I don't need it. Nobody needs cauliflower.
Especially if you steam it, it stinks.
Ugh.
Make a cream of cauliflower soup, but you walk in the house like, who's got, what's wrong with your stomach? Stinks. Stinks. And in reaction to all this, again, bonds are selling off. Highest 10 in 30 years since March 2024. But the other stuff is the 30 years really moving up pretty good. We have an outbreak of Ebola. I guess it's that time of year, huh, where we get this, the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We got to have more stuff coming out. So Ebola is one of them.
So Ebola we have. We have the Hapta. What is it now? The Hapta? Hanepta?
Hantavirus.
Hantavirus. Yeah. That's going on. It's the Republic of Congo and Uganda has declared a public health crisis, an emergency of international concern by the WHO. 80 deaths were attributed to the disease recently. But the outbreak does not meet pandemic criteria, the WHO says.
They wish it did.
Yeah. They'd be back in the spotlight again, right? 8 laboratories confirmed cases and 246 suspected cases. 6 Americans in the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, have been exposed to the Ebola virus with 3 exposures deemed high risk. Isn't this the disease that you just start bleeding from?
Yeah, it's hemorrhagic fever. You start bleeding through your eyes.
Yeah. That's terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, that and there's a couple of these. Marbury, I think, is another one.
Okay, so, over time I've said, you know, hey, if I was going to open up a restaurant, what kind of restaurant would I open? What would have the highest margins? Easy to do, you know, a pizza restaurant or a pasta place. Very low cost, high margins, easy to replicate, right? That's why we have them. Everybody loves them. Basically the same thing. Pasta is kind of a pasta with tomato sauce is basically like a soft pizza. I mean, it's just dough with sauce and cheese on it, right?
Okay. Same thing.
One of the highest margin foods. Okay, Domino's Pizza is among the pizza giants whose franchisees have filed for bankruptcy. Papa John's has said, we've identified approximately 300 underperforming restaurants across North America that are not meeting brand expectations or lack a clear path to sustainable financial improvement, as well as locations where you can effectively transfer sales to a nearby restaurant. So there's too many restaurants that they have. And then you have Pizza Hut, which also hasn't yet filed for bankruptcy, closing on the company's parent, Yum Brands, in February, said it will be closing 250 underperforming locations as part of its Hut Forward plan. Pizza. You know, that's Papa John's, down 65% over the last 5 years of stock. And remember that Papa John Shatner, remember that? Schnatter? Papa John Schnatter? No. He was the CEO and founder. They booted him.
Oh.
Yeah, they in 2000, what was that, 2000, I guess they finalized it in 2019. He was out. Sorry, founder.
So he's out and the place is now having trouble?
It's having a lot of trouble.
Or was it having trouble and they had to get rid of him?
He had, I think he did some strange things. He was accused of a bunch of stuff. Like I think
what?
It was let's see. What did Papa John do to get booted? Let's see. He had, during a role-playing exercise intended to prevent PR missteps, He used the N-word while attempting to downplay previous controversies.
His role-playing, okay.
His ultimate exit was preceded by his resignation. He blamed slowing pizza at the NFL's handling of players kneeling during the national anthem. He had a couple of slurs. There was a whole bunch of like things, and that they felt that the board and all felt that he could not, that they could not move forward with a lead that was now doing things that was concerning everybody. And this, of course, was during the height of what was that DEI?
Me Too.
2018 was 2018 Me Too? I don't think so.
I don't know.
I think it was DEI.
Okay, it could be.
Yeah. So they booted him. Booted.
Well, I guess he didn't play his cards right.
Traders looked to, again, test Kevin Warsh. Japanese long bonds are also moving up, though. Surge to multiple decade highs. Highest level on the 10-year JGB. You want to take a guess how long? Now, let's before I ask you this question. Do you remember not too long ago that the Japanese government bonds were forever, it seemed, at sub-zero? They created the negative bond yield?
The sub-zero bull crap.
Right? Remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Well, now Japanese long-term bonds have surged to multi-decade highs. 10-year hitting 2.8%, the highest since... Pick a date. Pick a year.
1950.
No, that's a long time ago. 1996.
Okay.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
That's very significant. And that chart, if you saw the chart, it's vertical. And what's really fascinating is that the yen keeps on going down. So abandoning bonds, selling the yen. But meanwhile, the stock market keeps on flying higher. Yields are higher, makes it tougher for companies to get money, to borrow money at a reasonable rate. When you look at that, what you usually do is do a discount model. A couple of different ways to do it, but you could do a discounting model on the valuation of the company. And what you do is you plug in a risk-free rate of return. And when that risk-free rate of return is, let's just say, zero, that when it's zero, what happens is that the valuation of a stock, the terminal value in the calculation, shows that it's a lot higher. When you increase the yield of the risk-free rate of return, stocks are not such a good deal. So what happens is it drops down the valuation metric. Meanwhile, we see this giant pop. You would think under normal economics and valuations 101, going back to the beginning of time when you look at what a company is worth, you would think that that would affect the valuations and stock market price. But no, not at all. Nope. No impact. So price discovery is pretty much dead.
I guess so. That's funny.
Yeah. Utility companies is a big merger happening. We just found about this a couple days ago. NextEra Energy is buying Dominion Energy. They're going to be merging. $66 billion deal that will create one of the world's biggest, largest electrical utilities. This is because they want to make sure they have what they need. They're restarting a nuclear reactor. This is all about supporting, of course, you know, the artificial intelligence, the data centers. It's an all-stock transaction. Of course, it's going to have regulatory scrutiny, but that seems to be less and less these days. And then this is on top of AES Corp, which was acquired by a consortium with Global Infrastructure Partners and a Swedish private equity firm, EQT, for about $33 billion. Constellation Energies merged, bought Calpine, Blackstone's $11.5 billion deal for TXMM Energy last year. So there's a lot of consolidation going on in this industry. Dominion was up about 5% on this deal. NextEra was down about 3% on it. good news. The biggest reported item that is being gained from the China visit is what, you may say?
Well, you already predicted it in the last show.
There you go. It happened. We get more soybeans. They're buying more soybeans.
Yeah, they're supposed to be buying some Boeing jets.
200, but that was far less than anticipated.
No, I thought it was more. I thought they anticipated 150.
Nope, that's 400, 400 was the outside number.
No. My understanding was they anticipated 150, got 200, would hope for 400.
The stock was down. Stock was down 4% that day on the number. So, maybe.
Well, did they sign anything yet? No.
No. Greer noted, this is the U.S. Trade Representative, 25 million metric tons per year of soybeans agreed to on last October, which, of course, just to let you know, they weren't buying as much as they anticipated.
They're not buying as much as they promised.
Of course. So there's an agreement for double-digit billion purchase of ags over the next 3 years coming out of this visit. And what happened? Soybean prices and wheat prices and all sorts of other agricultural prices went up on it. Huh. So we got that. Now, all these other guys traipsing over there, what was the best thing that came out of that, in your opinion, of that conference? Anything that you noted?
Not really, except I think it did give Trump the opportunity to introduce all these guys to Xi, because most of them haven't met the guy. So that was kind of like a fun. I thought the thing was, generally speaking, was a dud.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, it was good to do, I think.
What was interesting was I thought the best was the faces and craziness of Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah. Well, Musk is the character.
That was great. He made some funny things.
He's doing selfies with all these different guys. Yeah,
he's having fun over there. He doesn't care. And all these guys want to do it with him. But what was funny was, he's like sitting there, and did you see that? I don't know. This was not true. There's no way this was true. About the time when Xi Jinping walks away from the table and Trump leans over and starts thumbing through his notebook?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, it was great. It can't be real. Two things. One, it can't be real because, come on. Number two, even if he was thumbing through it, it's all in Chinese. What is going to happen there?
Yeah, he can't read Chinese.
But it was kind of funny. All of a sudden, Xi Jinping gets up from the table. Everybody's looking the other way towards the center. Trump leans over, leans over to where he was sitting, opens up the book and starts thumping through it. It was great. Yeah. It was so funny. So funny. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, even, of course, with...
Who seems to be running everything.
He knows everything. He's a Treasury Secretary, but he's talking about what's going on in the bombs in the Strait of Hormuz and what's happening here and what's happening there. And he's on every TV. And these guys get a lot of press. So he expects price pressures to ease soon, just in time for Fed Chair Warsh to take over. Well, just to let you know, that happened today. I don't understand why we're listening to these guys, because they have been wrong basically about everything. This whole crew. Where's Lutnick? What happened to Lutnick? Where's Navarro? He was on some show today, I saw. But
Navarro's always been an outlier ever since he got thrown in jail.
He's also a little bit of a crazy dude with the tariffs.
Yeah. And Lutnick has got issues because they're accusing him of being buddies with Epstein and issues, he should be ousted and blah, blah, blah. So he's laying low.
But the problem is that I guess I see it. It's, you know, when the whole idea for, especially Bessent, we could say this about every one of the Treasury secretaries. They're cheerleaders. They get a tag team match. They got the fiscal side, the Treasury secretary being a significant cheerleader. And then you have the monetary side where you have the Fed. He said, I quote, "I firmly believe that nothing is more transient than a supply shock. And we can look through that, because before the Iranian conflict began, core inflation was coming down." So I don't understand. But what are they saying here? They're saying that before this, things were, inflation was coming down, right?
It was going great.
No, but why do they keep on looking at that? Because That's not where we are. I seriously don't understand this. Is it to try to say that if you take out the words, like looking at core inflation versus headline, take out food and energy and everything's just fine? Is that what they're looking at?
I you're asking the wrong guy, I have to say. I have no idea what they're thinking.
Hmm. Well, we noticed he sees substantial...
It's a lot of talk is all I notice.
Yeah, he has substantial disinflation ahead. And by the way, if there is substantial disinflation ahead, that would be bad news if the economy is slowing precipitously, right? If you, that could be problematic. If we see all of a sudden prices coming down, and if in fact, if we exclude food and energy, and particularly energy, but if we look at everything else, and if there's going to be big disinflation, doesn't that tell us that back to my fungibility of money where it goes from one place to another, that it's not being used where it needs to be used or spent because people are holding back and therefore it's a problem? I don't know what he's so excited about if we get into this whole disinflationary
period. Well, I think they're basing it on the price of things being related to it, the cost of energy, which isn't factored in the main calculation, but it is factored in when it happens. In other words, prices will drop if energy prices drop, and it looks great on paper.
And you know what else? Let's also call it as it is. And that is that when we have inflation and we have, let's say, a constant 4% inflation, then it jumps up to 6%, let's say. But then we come back to 4% where it is. We see disinflation there. We still have higher prices, but we just don't have the higher prices at the level it was. So instead of having 6%, now we have 4%. That's a disinflationary trend when it goes from 6 to 4.
But it's still cumulative and high.
Of course it is, but that's what they leave out of the conversation. This is what I'm trying to say. Everybody really needs to be careful out there with listening to this garbage. This is half of the facts. No tax on tips up to a certain amount, considering you have this, and if you have this income, that wasn't said. No tax on Social Security. Unless this, no tax on overtime. Well, and you know what I'm saying? These are great bites to sound great for those people that are the knuckle draggers out there that don't want to do any more research besides read headlines and listen to things. Don't be a knuckle dragger, people. Do not be a knuckle dragger.
No knuckle dragging.
No knuckle dragging. All right, earnings coming out this week, NVIDIA. So tomorrow after the close, Wednesday after the close, NVIDIA is coming out with their earnings. Of course, there's a high expectation for this because Mr. Leather Jacket himself has been making the tour, giving people high expectations, right? That there's no stopping this. This is a super cycle. We have years in the making, which, by the way, I'm not arguing with any of that. I'm not disagreeing. That's what it looks like. So I don't think there's any reason to believe anything other. Is, I guess, the question that people are asking now, is NVIDIA priced for perfection?
Priced how? I'm sorry?
Priced for perfection.
Priced for perfection?
Yeah, in other words, are they priced for perfection that they have to, that the lofty valuations that they hold right now are only going to be met and held if they continue with extraordinary surprises? If in fact they just meet where they are, nobody's going to be thrilled about it.
Well, I don't know how much more they can do.
I don't think people... This is
the song and dance is, I think, over.
This is like the Apple stock. You remember, Apple stock, people that held Apple stock for years never sold it because it always went up? Never. Never sold it. Which is good, by the way. Congratulations. Same thing with NVIDIA. You make so much money in a stock. You make, 8 times, 10 times, 20 times on your money. Probably not inclined to sell. Even because you've gone through all these other times that have been good and bad, and you figure that it's going to make it up. But
yeah, I would say it's a good time to hold.
I agree. Yep. So Wall Street is, the analysts are projecting EPS of $1.78 on revenues of $79.2 billion for the quarter, representing a year-over-year revenue increase of roughly 80%. That's eye-catching.
Yeah.
80%. That'd be nice. Any company would welcome that. I mean,
Well,
especially at this size. Yeah, exactly. It's not a dinky little company.
Right. It's not like you're starting out with $25 of earnings.
Yeah.
And you're increasing it by 100%. It's like, wow, you're up to 50. Good going. Now, this is big numbers. Big numbers. And the spend is dramatic. The free cash flow is going to be an issue, I think. One of the things that we're starting to watch is carefully is with all the expenditures that are happening with the promises, the build-outs, the CapEx that's going on into all the companies, the circular financing, all that, is watching free cash flow, because that's going to be an issue that's going to start dropping compared to where it's been because of all the spend that's going on. That comes out of there to a degree. You know, you have to look at that whole side. That's just a marker to see really what the profitability really is without all that. So we'll see. OpenAI and Musk, round one. Musk loses on what looks to be a technicality.
I followed some of this, and he obviously should have lost.
Because of the technicality?
No, it's the nature of the whole lawsuit, and it seemed like a guy who was invested and then kind of got out and should not have gotten out, and then was kind of irked about it and tried to get back in. I just found the whole thing to be sketchy.
Mm.
In other words, I'm not surprised in the least that he lost that case.
Do you think maybe the jurors were a little peeved that he
about what?
That he wasn't there for closing arguments? He decided to go to China at last minute?
No, I don't think so. People like Elon Musk in the Bay Area.
I'm just saying, I don't know. And then, SpaceX, they're talking about IPOing in the next month or so.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be interesting. 1.5 trillion is the number. 1.75 is the outside number. Maybe upwards of even a $2 trillion IPO. That would be something. Yeah. That would trade 100 times revenue to start.
It's ridiculous.
That's pretty good. 100 times
revenue. Yeah, that'll hurt the market, though.
It would pull a lot from the market. Yep. Even more creative financing. Google and Blackstone are drawing significant investor attention following the announcement of TPU Cloud, a new U.S.-based joint venture, decide to commercialize Google's Tensor processing unit infrastructure at a greater scale. So this is their, not their equivalent, but their chip. So this partnership underscores the accelerating arms race in AI infrastructure while also highlighting how hyperscalers are increasingly turning to alternative financing structures. I'll read that again. Hyperscalers are increasingly turning to alternative financing structures. Now, these are being used to fund the enormous capital requirements tied to next generation AI compute expansion. So this is harkening back to what we started the show with, talking about the demand versus supply. And in 2000, it turned out to be an issue about payments.
Yeah.
And we're starting to see more and more creative financing going on here. And this is another one that's happening. Bringing in Blackstone with them instead of just issuing shares, doing it yourself, issuing debt, or just paying for it out of cash flow.
Huh.
So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. There's also a lot more competition. You know, you have many companies like Amazon with their chips and, competing with NVIDIA. And you have the TPU TPU Cloud from Google, and a lot of companies are trying to make their own chips. So there's no question there's a high demand, and it's insatiable demand right now. Prices are going up. It's kind of interesting how this whole thing is really playing. All right, what else we got? A fuel shortages. Straits of Hormuz is closed, by the way. Is everybody clear on that?
I heard that.
A couple of boats went in and out. We went after, I guess we captured a tanker in the Indian Ocean that was flagged for Iran, I guess.
We actually grabbed quite a few boats, ships.
Yeah. So here's what's happening. Fuel is running low around the world. India, a severe LPG cooking gas shortages, rationing in many areas. Pakistan and Bangladesh, critical LPG and diesel shortages. Southeast Asia, we're talking about Thailand, Vietnam, Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia. Jet fuel and diesel shortages, flight cuts. South Korea and Taiwan, similar. Europe, especially the UK, jet fuel critically low, risk of flight cancellations. Talked about the something like the 20,000 flights that Lufthansa canceled over the summer.
Yeah.
Africa, talking about South Africa, Nigeria, parts of East Africa, jet fuel and import shortages. Cuba, out of fuel. They got nothing. They're done.
They got nothing.
Nothing. And then there's a list here that I picked up. Cooking fuel shortages. That's kind of scary. It's one thing if you can't travel. Right? Okay, so you can't travel. Can't get out of the house too much. It's another thing you can't cook your food. So India, severe shortages, long queues, rationing. Pakistan, same thing. Bangladesh, same thing.
You can burn wood.
You could burn wood, I guess, but it's a major... you can't do that in your house or in your apartment.
You have a fireplace. People used to cook in the hearth.
Used to. Now they have like little stoves. So all over the place. All over the place. No physical shortage in Europe, U.S., of course. Higher prices are affecting us. In Africa, sharp price increases, reduced affordability. Lots of weirdness, man.
Yeah, they don't even, and this doesn't even include the helium problem.
Yeah. Or the urea.
Or the urea, yep. Both things aren't even on this list.
And tell everybody, because you know about this, about people think, when a lot of people think of helium, they think of squeaky voices and balloons. Yeah. But that's not what there's really need for. That's not what the big money's at, right?
No, it's used to make, it's part and parcel of the semiconductor manufacturing process.
Can they sub out another gas?
No. If they could, they would.
Crazy. Crazy. It's crazy. By the way, just a quick note. My foot continues to blow up here. I have no idea how I'm going to drive home tonight.
You can drive home with a aching foot.
It hurts.
Take an Uber.
I can take an Uber. I can get the wife to pick me up, of course, too. I'll probably just figure out how to...